Good afternoon, everybody. I think we'll go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome you here to our session on patient navigation, and we're glad that you came to spend this time with us this afternoon. And my name is Electra Paskett. I'm from the Ohio State University, and I'll be your moderator, as well as I'm going to just give you a little bit of a framework so that you can understand where all of our sites are coming in terms of what we mean by patient navigation, a little bit about the whole patient navigation research program, which is an NCI and American Cancer Society initiative, the sites that are funded. So this will provide some common framework from which the next four presenters will follow. So I want to start with some background on patient navigation. We all know that there are new discoveries made in terms of how to treat cancer, how to identify it earlier, and those discoveries are brought into development, and they're delivered to some, but not all of the people who could benefit from it. And this critical disconnect between the development of these life-saving procedures and delivery results in cancer health disparities. And one of the reasons is that there are a multitude of barriers to receiving cancer care. There are cultural barriers, patient barriers, program and administrative barriers, as well as barriers in navigating the system itself. And these barriers just add and contribute to this disconnect. So when we talk about patient navigation and the patient navigation research program, we're really talking about the time from an abnormal diagnosis, or the results of a test are back and they're abnormal, through diagnosis and up into the conclusion of treatment. So for the patient research navigation program, that time frame from the initial abnormal test result to the end of treatment is the time period that we're concerned with. And other navigation programs deal with outreach, contribute to increased screening, and some deal even with survivorship. But for our discussions today, our programs are really focusing on this time here. And navigators then, during this time period and with the barriers in mind that there are to receiving appropriate care, navigators can fulfill many roles in making sure that patients get appropriate services and care. They can help a patient cope with the diagnosis and treatment. They can provide education. They can help encourage participants to go on clinical trials. They can help with consent translations, etc. So this again is all the possible roles that navigators can play. So specifically for the patient navigator research program, these are the sites that are included in the study. And we go from Portland, Oregon in the Northwest, clear across the country right here to Moffitt in Florida, and then up north in Boston, in Rochester, Washington, D.C., San Antonio, Colorado, Chicago, and Ohio, which is not colored because it's funded by the American Cancer Society. And the cancer sites that we are examining in the patient navigation research program are four sites: breast, cervical, colorectal, and prostate. And you can see the distribution. Sites could choose to do 1, 2, 3, or 4 cancers, and you can see how those are distributed across the 9 sites. So the overall goal of the patient navigation research program is to develop interventions to reduce and ultimately eliminate disparities in cancer clinical outcomes related to lack of timely access to culturally sensitive quality standard cancer care, including diagnosis and treatment, among populations who often experience the greatest burden of cancer. The outcomes that the program is interested in capturing are, first of all, time, looking at the effect of navigation on time from the abnormal finding to diagnosis, the time from diagnosis to the initiation of treatment, and the time from initiation of treatment to the end of the primary treatment. looking at patient satisfaction with navigation, with the cancer care delivery system, looking at the improvement in quality of life or how quality of life changes over time and amongst those who are navigated and those who are not navigated, and then looking at the cost effectiveness of patient navigation. In terms of process evaluations, we're collecting a lot of data that will look at the navigator interventions themselves, navigator training, competency, caseload, the effect of matching the patient with navigator characteristics, what's the difference between using professional versus lay navigators, and look at the different networks in the community that navigators establish in order to make sure that their patients get the appropriate services that they need. We have common data elements that all the sites use. We, for the cancer patients or the patients themselves, we're collecting demographic data, socioeconomic status, family history, comorbidity. We have several instruments that we're using to assess satisfaction. We're looking at literacy as well as resources and costs. And for the cancers themselves, the four cancers, we're collecting all of these data on each of the cancers. There are certain common eligibility criteria, and then we collect data on the diagnostic workup, definitive diagnosis stage, if they entered a clinical trial, and then the treatment regimens that the patients receive. For the patient navigator, the navigators themselves, we're collecting data on the demographics of the navigator. We're having them track all of their activities and all of the barriers that the patients report over time. And then they do what's called a patient navigator performance checklist, looking at client interaction, care management, intervention, and they do a lot of documentation. So we're going to have a lot of data, both outcome and process data. And the goal is that once we get all of our data, we'll be able to perhaps learn some lessons and best practices about what works. We'll be able to provide some support to help patients access the cancer care system, and we'll be able to give some definitive answers on the impact of patient navigation on timely receipt of cancer care, help encourage collaborations and partnerships, and support long-term research in terms of eliminating cancer health disparities. But one of our main goals is to determine if patient navigation can be delivered cost-effectively to warrant insurance reimbursement for these type of services. So that's just a real brief overview of the common framework that all of these sites are working on for this program. And now I'm going to turn the time over to Beth Calhoun from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and she's going to talk about the Chicago Cancer Navigation Project.
Okay, so in Chicago, we are working in two distinct systems, one in the Veterans Administration, which we're recruiting for prostate and colorectal, and the other in Access, where we're doing breast and cervical. The VA, so it's in an urban center in Chicago. It's quite large, with over 500,000 outpatient visits. More than half of their patients are racial and ethnic minorities. Almost all have low SES, and over half are over 65, and one-fifth have limited literacy skills. In Access, similar in terms of they have about 30%, 25% are uninsured, about half and half are African-American and Latino, although it's getting to be, it was 10 years ago when I started working with them, probably like 80% African-American, and now we're seeing a real shift in Chicago. They're the largest FQHC in the country, serving over 200,000 unique underserved folks, and a very large safety net for us in Chicago. So when we started our program, I did a presentation this morning. For 7 years, I was doing a CDC program where we were working with some navigators out in the community and working through churches. And so I had some experience with working with peers and lay navigators, and knew, or at least thought, that we needed to have a little bit more support. So when I envisioned our team, I thought that we would need a multi-level tier to, of navigation that would include a clinical social worker, who I envisioned as the lead navigator, who would support would have support by a nurse clinician, and then have a lay health navigator. So we went in with this team idea to help navigate, as Electra was saying, from an abnormal cancer screen. So our in Chicago, our navigators sit at access, so they're sitting in the primary care sites. So when women are coming in to get their PAP and get their test results, they're right on site. And our conceptual model was, you know, the navigator, as Electra had a slide earlier, you know, works at both the patient within the health system and the social environment, and we felt all three of these skill sets would be useful to help negotiate patients through a very complex healthcare system. So when we, our clinical social worker still does operate as our lead navigator, and so she does the psychosocial assessments with our patients to look and help gauge what needs they may be having. She leads and supervises treatment planning. We have weekly staffings, if you will, to talk about difficult cases and difficult barriers and things that we're encountering, and she helps facilitate that. And she also is sort of a subcontract, if you will, to the American Cancer Society. So she operates in that arena, which also has a large network of resources that we're able to tap into. Our nurse clinician provides us mainly the clinical support. So she is very and has been very useful in supporting the team in ensuring eligibility, clarifying, you know, sort of complex clinical issues. But we've also used that person to talk directly to patients, relaying the information as a clinician can speak at a different level. So we've employed her to contact patients and be the person who can describe and give test results. And our lay health navigators have been really useful in helping us to further identify barriers. They're helpful in reminding patients about appointments. We do. We have a real difficult time sort of tracking down our folks, and a very transient population, so it's massive amounts of calling, and then the phones are disconnected, and you have to recall the first of the month when they have money and they can fill up their phone card. So we've used sort of the team approach that we give a list, and our lay navigators are very helpful and useful in doing that, and they accompany the patients, and they're from the neighborhoods, so lots of times they know the people or the auntie or when we're trying to find folks. So prior to this, when we're starting out at baseline, which was surprising, even in the VA, which has a pretty good system and has transportation, they bring them from Indiana, the follow-up rate from abnormal cancer screen with prostate, the percent who didn't follow up was about 30, with colorectal about 50. And in access with our women, 52% with an abnormal mammogram or clinical breast exam didn't follow up, and 56% for cervical cancer. So we're starting and hoping to certainly improve those percentages. Here's just a little brief background on our population. I think the most striking thing is, and this is actually only for the women, the most striking thing is we have about 53% who are uninsured. So we have a really hard, difficult population. They're younger, 33. Most graduated high school, but also 56% have incomes of less than $10,000. So living in downtown Chicago, that's a pretty tough income to live on. And so what we've learned so far with this sort of team approach and where we are, we've been recruiting for about a year. We found that our social worker is a great team member. She's able to handle complex psychosocial issues. She's been able to extend our peer lay navigators by providing with our treatment planning. She's able to be real constructive and give very specific plans, and she's really is useful in internal team building, and she's very knowledgeable of resources, and that's been a real plus, because as you know, when you're working with these populations, the resources are strapped and trying to find things. And so, you know, we had a patient who was ready to start chemo, but their utilities were getting shut off, and we needed to come up with $1,800, which you think somehow, but it took us like 10 different agencies to pull $100 here and $200 there, and so that this poor woman could start treatment without being, you know, so worried about freezing to death. And that was something that not having a social worker would have been a little more difficult, I think. Well, the other thing that we learned is our nurse clinician is really crucial for clinical support. So she's real knowledgeable about our eligibility criteria and making sure we adhere to that. She provides the social worker and the lay navigators education. So we've had to review some things about colposcopy, or if, you know, as Elector said, when there's new treatment advances, I mean, those are things that we're going to continually needing to be updated, and that person has been very useful for that. We've also been lucky to be able to deploy that person to discuss, you know, the medical information, either on a home visit, or we give the clinician for our very at-risk, the ones we have a couple that had cancer who we couldn't track down, so we gave it to our nurse clinician who, if she was able to get them on the phone or could get them at the house, would be able to discuss in detail the next steps and why this is so important for her to, you know, for the women to follow up. But the one thing we have learned is we had her full time, and she got sucked into doing lots of clinical work, like taking care of babies and all sorts of stuff. So at this point, we're parceling it out to having a part-time sort of PRN support, because we didn't need as much clinical support as we had thought originally. And what we've learned is that our navigators are obviously highly dedicated and motivated. They know the community, which has been really valuable. But they do need some level of professional support to function independently, at least in the structure that I have. And the thing that we've had the hardest time in has been helping them to integrate into the medical team. They didn't come from the clinics. They came from community. So this was a new system, and the system sort of had to get used to them, and they had to get used to the system. So that's been a dance that we've had to do in Chicago a bit. But I feel like we're finally sort of over a lot of those hurdles where they now see them as a real extender of their clinical arm. Our docs are sort of happily passing things off to them now, where initially there was some turf and that kind of stuff that took a little bit of time. And we also know that we have a cancer survivor who, you know, that empathy and that support has been very valuable.